Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. And joining us now is David Nywert, who's an award-winning journalist, author, and expert on American right-wing extremism. His books include The Eliminationists, How Hate Talk Radicalized the American Right, Strawberry Days, How Internment Destroyed a Japanese-American Community, as well as And Hell Followed With Her, Crossing the Dark Side of the American Border. His latest book just out is Alt-America, The Rise of the Radical Right in the Age of Trump. Welcome to Background Briefing, David Nywert.
Thanks for having me, Ian.
And, of course, the rise of the radical right is a global phenomenon, and there were recent demonstrations, of course, in Poland that were quite shocking. Of all places, a country that where the worst Nazi atrocities were committed, young Poles are walking down the main street in Warsaw saying Sieg Heil and pure blood and white Europe and all of this stuff. So clearly there's something happening in the global sense. But my concern is that the neo-Nazis in this country, the alt-right, are starting to look more like bankers and accountants than skinheads and tattooed thugs. And interesting enough, the New York Times got slammed for its what people accused of being a sympathetic profile of a suburban neo-Nazi. So has there been a kind of morphing, if you will, of the Nazis in this country into the mainstream?
Well, yes, although honestly, some of it actually has to do with morphing of the mainstream into Nazis. I mean, honestly, that's a lot of the dynamic that's been going on, is that mainstream conservatism has been increasingly radicalized over the last 10, 15 years. And, you know, as you know, Ian, I've been writing about this consistently for some time, that you know, mainstream conservatism is becoming more and more radical and more radicalized, and that's how we've gotten to this point. I mean, now Patrick Buchanan's overt white nationalism that he was, you know, made him a persona non grata back in 2001 and 2002 is now very much mainstream, and he's become fully rehabilitated as you know, our avuncular old a conservative white guy. And, you know, that's really fairly typical of what I think is the dynamic at play here. And that's maybe the part that's missing from the discussion of the piece on the New York Times. I mean, it really was a fairly atrocious piece of journalism that normalized Nazis in a way that I hadn't seen for quite some time. And it just had to do with the fact that the reporter was really inexperienced in actually having to deal with these guys. Now, you know, and I've been dealing with them actually since the late 1970s, so I know all the pitfalls, and it was kind of an agonizing piece to read.
Well, it's been agonizing in general to have the President of the United States basically make excuses for the Nazis in Charlottesville and equate them with the people they were beating up, including a young woman that was killed.
Sure.
That was just beyond belief. And now he's supporting a pedophile for the United States Senate.
Sure.
I mean, how much lower can the bar go? I mean,
they're getting started. They're just getting started. Trust me on this. Ian, what the dynamic that's at work is that these people are authoritarians. They're right-wing authoritarians, and boy, once you start going down that path, the end of the line is, you know, concentration camps and gas chambers. That's where this all goes. And so that's the road this takes us down. So Americans need to wake up to that reality, that, you know, we're being, their democratic institutions that they thought were going to just be stable for forever are under attack. These are profoundly anti-democratic movements. The alt-right is profoundly anti-democratic. So is the Patriot Militia movement. They're all fundamentally authoritarian, and they want to replace, you know, democracy with an authoritarian state. That's their goal. So, you know, they're openly antipathetic to democratic institutions and democratic principles. They like to use them to their own advantage, such as free speech that you are intimately familiar with, what's been happening in terms of how they use the issue of free speech to basically propagandize on their own behalf. It's a very cynical use of the principle. And, you know, it's just been ongoing since the election. And, you know, Donald Trump isn't just making excuses for them. It's really important for people to understand that the people on the radical right see him as their leader. He is their inspiration. He is the, it is under his banner that all of these factions have come together and rallied as one in a way we haven't seen in the United States in any time in its history.
Well, frankly, my sense is that, you know, talk about the New York Times normalizing a Nazi. Don't you think the term alt-right itself kind of normalized people like Stephen Bannon? It's an innocuous term compared to who these people really are.
Well, it is. It's part of the problem that we've always had in dealing with these guys. Look, we kind of had the same problem back in the 1990s when the militia movement started popping up and they called themselves the Patriot Movement. And trust me, you never met a more seditious bunch of people in your life than these guys. They're the, pretty much the antithesis of what you would normally think of as patriotic. But yet that's pretty much what we've kind of had to call them. And what the key is just understanding the sort of elasticity of language and understanding that that what matters is the perception of the name rather than what it may be intended originally as a PR term. But I think a lot of us have been working very hard to make people understand that alt-right equals fascist or proto-fascist. It's fundamentally a proto-fascist movement, and I think if it doesn't, in the end, what you call them, you know, look, there's also an accuracy issue that I have to deal with. People say, well, why don't you just call them Nazis? Well, for me, as someone who works with reporting on this stuff, Nazis occupy a very specific bandwidth of behavior and agendas and ideology. And these guys don't fit into, Nazis fit within the larger alt-right bandwidth, but it's a much broader and much more complex movement than that. And so just to call them Nazis doesn't actually catch the essence of them, and particularly the really powerful misogynist element that is there in the alt-right that's arisen out of the video gaming community, but also other aspects of it as well, including their hatred of mainstream conservatism, as well as, you know, there are just other aspects of it that Nazi doesn't capture, and alt-right is the only term that we've got that actually kind of covers the bandwidth. And so I don't mind calling them the alt-right, so long as everybody understands that alt-right is fundamentally proto-fascist. And that's, to me, the bigger task, is changing everyone, getting everyone to understand what alt-right means.
Well, preceding you on today's program, David and I were talking about Trump's recent tweets attacking CNN International and saying they propagate fake news around the world and recommending that Fox News becomes the voice of America abroad. And my sense is that, first of all, you know, obviously that puts correspondents in danger in these authoritarian countries where so much of the news happens, some of them quite lawless. And then it leads me to, when you talk about Trump being the leader of these people, Spencer and all those people see Trump as their leader. There's no two ways about it.
Yeah.
But the glue, as far as I can tell, is Rupert Murdoch and Fox. Isn't that what corrals all these people in this bubble of delusion where they believe everything that Trump says and everything that the rest of the media says is fake news?
Well, it's not just Murdoch, but there is no question that Fox News and Murdoch's operations have been the largest players in creating this epistemological bubble that I call Alt-America, this alternative universe for themselves that they've built around themselves. And there's no question that Fox News, throughout the Bush years, really throughout the Clinton years, into the Bush years, and especially during the Obama years, really created this huge divide between people who live in reality. You know, as Colbert says, reality has a well-established liberal bias, and you know, that's how they've behaved. That any kind of, you know, they basically have preferred to go with falsehoods and distortions as their version of reality, because otherwise they might have to deal with the reality that sometimes liberals are right. But at any rate, that's so Murdoch and Fox News have really been the role that they've played is that they've made it happen on a massive level. And especially, you know, early in the Obama years when they had Glenn Beck on the air, they became profoundly conspiracist in their orientation and running a lot of conspiracy theories. But when it comes to conspiracism, there's no question that the other gorilla on the block is Alex Jones and InfoWars, which has a massive audience. And they're the ones sort of out there on the edge who are drawing everybody further and further out into this alternative universe that fundamentally is just crazy.
Well, but Trump tweets out to these people. He's praised Alex Jones and this other, what they call something pill, complete whack jobs.
Yeah. He just the MAGA pill.
MAGA pill. Yeah, and he said they're the real news because they say nice things about him. Is Trump really a fascist, or does he really just only understand the media in terms of public relations, because that's all he's been doing over the years, is manipulating the media and getting himself in the headlines?
Well, he's actually, so he's not a fascist in the classic sense, and this is actually really important, understanding what is going on, because honestly, a real fascist wouldn't have been as successful as Trump has been. That's why it's so important that he's not. But yet what he is a classic right-wing populist demagogue. And everybody has sort of this misunderstanding of what constitutes fascism. Fascism is not, as a lot of people, both on the left and right, seem to believe, that fake quote from Mussolini that fascism is the marriage of corporatism and the government and government power. That's a fake quote. He never actually said that, and that's not what fascism is. Fascism, nor is fascism what, you know, Jonah Goldberg and the author of Liberal Fascism and Dinesh D'Souza, who wrote another book claiming that liberals were the real fascists. Neither is that accurate, even remotely at all. What fascism really ultimately is right-wing populism gone metastatic, gone wildly out of control, and becoming power mad, power hungry, and seeks power for its own sake. And that's what right-wing populism often, when it's unleashed, can turn into. And so Trump is very much playing on right-wing populism, and particularly its authoritarian component. And in that sense, he's doing it very much in the style of Henry Ford, who you may recall actually was the person who first promoted the hoax of Protocols of the Seven Elders of Zion, which Hitler then seized upon. He gave an Iron Cross to Henry Ford at one time for his service in this regard. And there's this powerful connection between right-wing populism and fascism, and we're really seeing that dynamic play out in the United States now.
But isn't it always, or mostly sort of inextricably bound with racism. I go back to Roy Moore, for example, because I'm just so appalled at the idea that that guy can get elected to the United States Senate. And he just, you know, all that sort of piety that he dresses himself up with. This is a very sick man, obviously. But he, the other day, when he actually first emerged after the first of the women came forth in the Washington Post story, he spoke at a church and dismissed it all as, you know, a Democratic hit job. And let's talk about the real issues. The first one is that in 1963, the Supreme Court outlawed prayer in school, issue number one. Issue number two, in 1965, they gave away special rights. Well, that is the Voting Rights Act. If that's not racist to the bone, I don't know what is.
That's right.
You know, and Charles Barkley has been down there campaigning for the Democrat, basically saying, you know, this is Stephen Bannon's, you know, white supremacist candidate.
Yeah, yeah, no, and that's absolutely right. And, of course, this is when we're looking at Moore, we're looking at the Christian evangelical component of Trump's base. And there's no question that, in my mind at least, conservative evangelicals, right-wing evangelicals, are fundamentally, they're religious authoritarians. It's authoritarianism applied to the religious realm. And so naturally, it fits in very neatly with people who are the personality types that are attracted to that kind of religion are also very much political authoritarians, right-wing authoritarians. And so they really mesh together very neatly, and it's not a surprise that they are part of that. And Moore's comments kind of underscore one of the realities that a lot of us who studied this for a long time understand, which is that when after the civil rights era in the mid-60s, you've got to remember that the Christian right, the evangelical right, was really closely tied up with the civil rights fight. And they were on the side of the segregationists and on the side of people who opposed civil rights advances for minorities. And after that, it became clear that that fight was lost, they changed their focus beginning in the mid-70s, early 70s, from civil rights and racial issues to abortion. But regardless of what the issue was, the underlying issue for them really was always going to be about race. And they just used abortion as kind of a proxy for attacking liberals and for recruiting within their own ranks and proselytizing. So, you know, when you hear them talking about abortion, a lot of times what they're really upset about is race.
Well, just in closing, though, do you think that the right wing's bugaboo enemy du jour is this, what they call Islamofascists? They've sort of, you know, there's still a bit of some anti-Semitism out there, but now they're going after the Muslims. Is it then appropriate to refer to these hypocrites, as a listener wrote into me, as Christo-fascists?
Well, I don't know about Christo-fascists. Certainly Christianists would be perfectly fine with me because, you know, I deal with terrorism quite a bit, and there is Islamist terrorism, and I don't use the word Islamic because it suggests that the entire religion is inclined to that kind of radicalism. But the Islamists are people who want to create a religious theocratic state under Islam. And as far as I'm concerned, the Christianists are people who want to create a Christian theocratic state under Christianity. And they are perfectly, almost exact, perfect mirrors of each other, except that the Islamists are in poorer economic straits and thus more inclined to acting out with terrorist violence in their world. But the Christianists are not very far behind in that regard.
Well, David Nyewert, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
I appreciate you having me on, Ian. Give me a call anytime.
Absolutely. And again, I've been speaking with David Nyewert, who's an award-winning journalist, author, and expert on American right-wing extremism. His books include The Eliminationists, How Hate Talk Radicalized the American Right, Strawberry Days, How Internment Destroyed a Japanese-American Community, and Hell Followed With Her, Crossing the Dark Side of the American Border. And his latest book just out is Alt-America, The Rise of the Radical Right in the Age of Trump. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.